We've got a code. Use code VOLLYPOD for 20% off almost anything on the Art of Coaching Volleyball website, including premium memberships, coaching resources, and nearly all books. That's VOLLYPOD, VOLLEYPOD. Use it to save anytime you're on the site. Are you ready to take your volleyball game to the next level? Every week on the VOLLYPOD, we talk to two top coaches who share their secrets for success on the court. From drills to build skills to strategies for boosting confidence, you won't want to miss this valuable advice. Tune in now and elevate your game today.
Good morning and welcome to the VOLLYPOD. How are you this evening, Todd?
Good morning and this evening. I love it. Rise and shine. In this evening, this is the way we rock and roll here at the VOLLYPOD. I like it. All times of the day, wherever you are listening.
So absolutely.
I am doing well, both in the morning and in the evening. And good to see you.
Good to see you.
I know you just got back from your latest and last qualifier. Give us a little rundown of that.
So, yeah, we got back from Salt Lake City, and I love that tournament. We participated in the USA Division, 16 USA. And we got, I believe, sixth in the tournament. And I was overall pretty pleased with that because there was already a number of teams that had qualified in USA that were still there, you know, in that division. And we competed really well with them. We beat two teams out there that had already qualified and lost to the other two. And that's what kind of knocked us out. But I thought we really performed pretty well. We still got a lot to work on.
Yeah, well, you always have a lot to work on, but you feel like you're getting a little better and the kids are fired up. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Is this a long season?
Oh, it's a long season. And yeah, the team was just great out there. They had a great attitude. Everyone was into it. And I mean, we've played three tournaments in 4 weekends, you know, two travel tournaments.
And now you have a little break now before you get into what, final SCBA and then JO, something like that. Is that the schedule?
Yep. So we got 4 weeks off and then we go into SCBA championships, which doesn't have to do really with qualifying. It's just, it's kind of the championship,
right, qualifying's for the region. Done. Yeah. So it's just, yeah, it's just the SCBA. Battle of SoCal.
Battle of SoCal, yeah. And then we got JOs. So yeah, it's almost kind of coming to an end in terms of tournaments, but we still got like 2 months left, basically.
Right.
So,
and then JOs, where are they?
They're in Las Vegas for us.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The 18s, I believe, are in Baltimore, but for the 16s, everyone's in Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're back out there for our second time. And you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to
be a blast. Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah, Viva Las Vegas. Right. I love seeing all my buddies out there that I've just known cool. and stuff. So, yeah, we're excited.
Yeah, it's not too far. It's a quick trip for us from San Diego. So that's what
absolutely.
The travel makes it pretty convenient. So absolutely. Good stuff. Well, I think you're going to start with the skill today. I think it's your turn. What are you having in the queue for us?
Okay, so I've been thinking a lot about culture and today we're going to talk about how you can move from a cutthroat culture to a competitive culture. Now, I think first it's important to describe what those are. And I got these terms from Jeff Jansen's book, How to Build a Championship Culture, right? And they definitely mean two different things, although they're kind of intertwined.
Okay.
Right? A cutthroat culture focuses more on individual accolades and short-term accomplishments in some ways compared to a competitive culture. Competitive culture is competitive, meaning players are competing and you are handling things in a competitive manner, but there's not as much division amongst the team, especially between players. And I'm going to go into some of this stuff. The main difference, though, between the two has to do with love and appreciation and the bond that players have and the coaches have with one another. And it takes time to develop. It just does not happen. Although sometimes you're kind of lucky and it just kind of is there. But a true championship culture, a true, you know, competitive culture will take some time because they have to develop trust in each other, right? And no, you know, bowling, no, you know, pasta night is going to.
But those things aren't bad.
It's not bad, but it doesn't make it.
They're not going to make it, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's not going to fix your culture.
Exactly. So there are some things to think about when we're going into this more competitive culture. And the first is basically you need to build safety. Okay. If they're not able to feel vulnerable, they will not reach their fullest experience or the fullest expression of themselves. They'll be they'll hide it, so to speak, or keep it to themselves. So you want to find ways to create that. The other thing is having a common purpose, right? So I think all the times we assume that these all have the same reasons for being here. The players all have the same reasons for being here. And that's not always the case.
Oh, definitely right? Not. Well, yeah. Our sport is, rooted in selfishness in many ways, just because of the paradigm of, hey, it's expensive.
Yep.
The parents are sacrificing a lot, which means they want their kid to get a lot out of it. And if you're a parent paying a bunch of money, is your first priority that the team is bonding,
right?
And that your kid's a great teammate,
right?
Or is your first priority that your kid can go to college and play volleyball?
Right. Absolutely. The parents matter too.
Big time. They're part of it. Yeah,
absolutely.
So, but they set the state.
Definitely. They're the ones paying the bills. Yeah. It really has to do with everyone involved, right? Yeah. Is everyone involved? Has everyone bought in, so to speak? And I don't really love that term buy-in, but I think there is a degree of that where you have to connect with the mission that your team is trying to do. If you don't connect.
A bunch of it's language, you know.
Yes.
Are you on the bus or off the bus?
Yes.
I'm an on the bus, off the bus guy rather than is there buy-in? Buy-in
right.
Sounds kind of like an economic.
Yeah, kind of you salesman-y. I'm with you on that.
I like, you're on the bus or off the bus?
Yes, I like that. Now, cutthroat culture has to do with competing against one another a lot. So it's, Sally versus Jane for the outside one spot. Whereas on a competitive culture or championship culture, it might be we're going to put the best person out there and we're really hoping these two play well against each other to build the team up, something like that. And it becomes bigger than one person, right?
Right. I think I'm not great with this term of that zero sum game, hey, there has to be a loser.
Yes.
But can you compete and can everybody win?
That's a great way.
Rather than, I won and you lost.
That is exactly right. Exactly. And that cutthroat, that's a good way of putting it, right? So playing time is viewed as a scarcity. There's not enough play time to go around, quote unquote. Winning in practice is highly important. And this can lead to not a lot of experimentation and not a lot of growth because you want to sort of play within yourself and kind of stick to what works. Because you got to win practice to be on the court because there's a scarce amount of playing time. Winning every play and dominating the opposition is viewed in high regard on a cutthroat culture. And winning is highly prized, even if people get hurt in the process and even if you might need to skip some corners or cheat a little bit. Okay, this is all cutthroat culture stuff. Mental, emotional manipulation can be used to gain an advantage. Now, I know coaches that do this on purpose, right? They mentally manipulate their players and emotionally manipulate their players. I mean, maybe they're not saying I'm manipulating them, but they are manipulating them.
What are you talking about? Give me an example of that.
Saying maybe you whisper to the starting H1, and her name's Sally and the reserve is Jane. It's like, Jane's playing really well today. You better step up your game, right? That's a bit of manipulation. It might be true, but those kind of comments pitting two players against each other are not typically helpful in the long run.
Yep.
In the short run, it might give them a little burst, but it also builds distrust, right? So there's even more stuff like making people, like trying to kind of break people's spirit, quote unquote. So I'm going to run you until your spirit is broken and you're going to follow everything that I say, you don't like it. Well, let's run, so that kind of thing where it's a manipulation tool. I just think it's overused, right?
Yeah. That kind of, I'm going to break you down to build you back up even stronger. Right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And in my experience and in this research that I read in this book by Jeff Jansen, you're saying this is not helpful, right? Often punishment is used as a tool for improvement, right? And we know punishment is a fleeting tool, meaning it doesn't last very long. You're not in championships because you're afraid of getting punished. Generally, you're in championships because you aspire to be something that gives you. Statistics and comparison are important. Like, I think statistics are important, but they're important as a tool.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's kind of one of the things we had with the cauldron, right?
Yes, yes.
When everything is up on the board and there isn't a chance to make mistakes and experiment and grow. Right. And you can say, hey, well, that's good because that's what's going to happen in a game. On the other hand, do players need space to experiment,
right,
and make some mistakes and go way out of their comfort zone?
Yes.
To improve at a faster rate.
Right. Absolutely. And again, it's what you're focused on, right? If the goal is just a win, you can do that a lot of times by staying the same, but you're never going to win more than you are now, right? Because you're not going to improve at least as quickly, right? So it's just, there's a lot to go on there. So you can win a lot of matches with a cutthroat culture, right? I absolutely believe you can. And there's a lot of coaches that do, but I don't think you can quote unquote win forever. Okay. Like, you know, that Pete Caroline win forever. He's got this idea that we're going to win life. And by win life, I mean, I'm going to have the best life, but meaning I'm going to put myself out there and be fully invested all the time. Right. And championship culture and competitive culture, that sort of breeds that idea that, you know, what's next? We won this one. Now what's next?
Yep.
You know, we won this one. Now what's next? Right. Cutthroat culture ultimately, though, pushes people away from one another and can build animosity and doesn't allow teams to stick together. Right. So the competitive culture transcends sports. So what that means is I want to be the best person I can be, right? Not just the best volleyball player,
right?
There's these characteristics that go beyond passing and setting and hitting or whatever that you bring out when you really want to be the best version of yourself. The team becomes an extension of you. So if someone's hurt or struggling, you feel that to a degree, or you reach out to them. The bond with your teammates allows you to go through difficult times together and gives you support. Teammates feel more supported than isolated, and everything you do in training and beyond is focused on being the best version of yourself that you can be. Quote unquote, maxing out your potential is prominent, right? And that this is one of the key things, I think. So cutthroat is get it done. Competitive or championship culture is get it done to the best of your ability, right?
Well, there's some process and product stuff there, I think.
Yes, right, absolutely.
That where we're looking at that, you know, that cutthroat is, well, if I beat you, that's good enough.
Right, right.
And even if I'm going to play that well or I don't improve or anything, I won.
Right.
So it's good. Whereas when you look at a competitive culture, it's like, wait a minute, I'm trying to get better. And I want somebody to push me to get better.
Yes.
And if I lose, but I am pushed to be my best and it's better than I've ever played and I still lose because you played better than you ever played, then it's a win-win. Right.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And I heard this great story about Kobe Bryant. They're playing one-on-one, right? And this guy goes over and sees them play and he's like, oh, what's the score? And Kobe goes 60-0. And the guy's like, you mean 16-0? No, 60-0 by ones. They were playing by ones. And so I guess the point is like Kobe just wanted to get better. Like he wanted to dominate, you know, obviously he wanted to make this guy lose the game, but he had already lost. I mean, right. You know, so it's like he wanted to play his absolute best every single time. I just think that's a cool example of this. Punishment's not really necessary in competitive culture a lot of times because the players are self-driven,
right,
and internally motivated, right? And the focus on the team means getting dialed in and getting on the same page happens more regularly and with a lot greater ease. So if you need to dial up, you're like, we can do it. And it's much easier to switch because it's a unit versus a bunch of separations. There's a few things I have about how to switch. So those are kind of defining these. I'm just going to run through these really quickly because these are just ideas for people, but it's worth it to switch, right? Cutthroat doesn't feel good, right, for most people involved. But one of the first ones is communicate. Okay, we have to communicate, and communicating is not always easy. So we have to communicate. We have to allow time for processing, right? So as coaches, we all are hurrying up the process, like hurry up, learn this right now. And some of the bigger lessons, they take a while to learn,
yep.
You know? So it's just important to leave some time for that. Learn about each other. This is amazing that a lot of these people don't know about each other on their team, and celebrate the differences that they have between them. That's probably one of the biggest ones. It's hard to hate people that you know well, yep. right? So learn about each other. Allow individuals to be individuals. Like there was this great story in 12 Rings, how Michael Jordan went out to Atlantic City. Do you remember this?
I'll probably remember okay, when you
so,
tell me.
So. Well, so he goes out to Atlantic City the night before a game and doesn't come in till like, you know, I don't know, 3 a.m. or something like that. And Phil Jackson doesn't say a word. And everyone's like looking at me like, I would have gotten in trouble so bad. Like I would never be put. But that's Michael Jordan. He's got his stuff together. He knows what's going on. And he treated him like an individual, right? Whereas Rodman might have a different treatment on the same team.
Well, no, I mean, Rodman was even worse. Phil still gave him a super long leash.
Yeah, he did. He did give him a long leash, but he got on his case a lot too, So anyways, but I guess the point is like treat each people different. Not everyone gets the same thing. Everyone gets what they deserve. No, I'm sorry. Everyone gets what they get, not necessarily what they deserve, right? Yeah. It's important to treat individuals as individuals. De-emphasize individual accolades. I know this is one of the things you did at Bishop's, right? A while back was kind of did away with some of those.
We don't do any end of the season awards.
Yes,
we
I like that. I've tried to do that at my other high schools.
And it took me some years to change that. I always laugh that I would always talk to the captains. They were like, Coach, that's a great idea. Let's start it next year when I'm gone.
That's right. That's awesome. Framing, right? We always talk about framing. Yep. What was good about today? So-and-so got 60 points. That really helped our team be in the game versus, so-and-so got 16 points and, great job, so-and-so, right? It all connects back to the team. And then we have a couple examples of how you can take some games in practice and turn them into competitive games versus cutthroat games. So outside versus outside, right? Again, this is a framing one. Okay. Are we playing outside to see who starts this week? If so, it's more cutthroat. If I'm playing outside versus outside, so they both get better, so we have options, so the team can win, then that's more competitive, more championship culture. Doghouse, I think, is in a way more cutthroat, right? Versus Queen of the Court, which is in a way more competitive culture.
Yeah.
Doghouse, you go out if you don't perform, and Queen of the Court, you stay on if you win. So it's just, again, a different framing. They both have different effects, and I would use both of them. And it doesn't mean because you use that activity that you have a cutthroat culture. You just got to be aware of how much you're using it and what impact it's having on the team. And then finally, the consequence paid by the individual or the consequence paid by the whole group, right? I think a lot of times they want just the penalty to be on themselves, like some sort of consequence. Oh, you're late. I'll run. I like the idea of everyone paying the consequence, if there is a consequence. I don't like the term punishment, but if there's a consequence, everyone does it because we're a team. And then finally, there's a punishment for losing. Like I remember when we used to play Kelly Drobeck's team at Cathedral, if the teams got more than 10 on them, she would go back right after the match and practice. it's like the product is the thing, right? Not the process, right? And then finally, in a competitive culture, there's a reward for great effort, and that reward in it is great effort and the feeling that comes from that. So it's just a bunch of stuff to think about.
We're all straddling that line.
Exactly. Hey,
and the idea of having high standards.
Yep.
And being, competitive, but then going over that line into cutthroat and managing that. A great topic. I love it.
Thank you so much. So now you are on the scenario.
All right. This scenario. My team needs a mid-season serve-receive tune-up.
Oh, what? You wrote this just about me. Thanks, Todd. No, we do need it, though. That's for sure.
Okay. So I have a list of 10. I'm a big list of 10 guy. So number one, revisit communication expectations.
Okay.
So just kind of getting back to some basics. So when you call the ball, how are you going to do it? I'm a one syllable guy. I'm a mine.
Right.
And then if it's close again, I'm a mine. Mine.
Yes. Okay.
I'm like a more. That. And so that's, and so kind of revisiting that. I'm not I go.
Yes.
Because I like that. That go is a little different for me because it's sometimes I'm going to yell go to somebody to go for a ball.
Right.
So I don't want
that's a good point.
Some vernacular confusion. I want it to be, I want clarity there with the communication. And then timing. When are we calling it? Can we call it before it crosses the net?
I like that.
And so those are things just to start with this communication. Right. That's cool. Next, when we're training, and we've talked about this a little bit before, put at least two passers in serve receive to spotlight communication and seam awareness.
Yes.
So we're never going out and passing with one person.
I like
there's
that.
Always two people there. And so there's always a, you know, it's part of that kind of eco D, I have to make a decision.
Right.
And part of passing is making a decision. Is this mine or not?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's a great one. And we've emphasized that lately, and it's really, really helped for sure.
Next one. Whenever possible, and be creative as you can you train two-sided? Can you get more reps by passing on both sides of the court? And you might use coaches as targets. You know, however you can be creative, you might put your setters in there and have them setting or whatever on each side, however you do it. Right. But can you have, if let's say you have two people passing on each side, so and then other people serving and then some targets or whatever, but can you keep more people involved to get more reps, more decisions? Is that my ball or not?
I love that.
When you train. Yeah. Number four, rather than rotate out of every pass, use a three in a row format. You know, this is, I'm a huge three in a row guy.
Yes.
So my thing is, you know, my servers, passers, if we're a server, I'm trying to get three in a row to put the passers out of system. If I don't, I rotate out. If I do, I get to stay for three and I get a big point. Passers, same thing. I don't just pass a ball and leave whether I pass it well or not. If I pass it well, I get to stay again. And it kind of reinforces that thing like, hey, I'm the best passer. Right. I'm out here all the time. If my libero is the best passer, I want her to get more reps than everybody. Yes. And this is built into this format.
I like that. And then the other thing I really like about that is this idea of you're passing average, meaning like one pass doesn't define you.
Yep.
A three pass or a zero doesn't define you. You get you back in there trying to go for runs. Yep. Right. I like that.
Number five, on ball served out, passer should move to sideline or end line.
Yes.
So we're just kind of remembering that, hey, if you're moving before the ball gets to the net, right, then you're getting steps off and you should be on that sideline or end line by the time the ball gets there.
It's a good point for sure. Yeah.
And I think that even as players get older, they get they like being casual. Like, I knew that was out. Yeah, I didn't move.
I was just going to say.
And then it's like, oh, shit. You know, it's one of those, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And number six is along those same lines. Practice letting balls go out long.
Oh, yeah.
And how many balls are people playing and they'll pull out their hands and go overhead? Yeah. You know, when you need this big, you know, you need this side out, kid goes back and hits a ball that's out. And your passer pulls out her hands on a ball that's 10 feet out and jabs it in the air. And you're and we had him on the ropes and then we just let him off.
Right. Yes.
Number seven, we've talked about this. Celebrate ace prevention, even if it's a bad pass.
Yes. I got into this a lot lately and it's probably one of the bigger changes we've made. It's been huge for us. Yeah. Just save the point.
Save the point.
Save the point.
Hey, saving the point's better than a perfect pass because we're not going to score.
Right.
We're not going to score every time we have a perfect pass.
Right.
And at your level, you know, with the 16s, you're scoring on perfect passes, you know, maybe what, 60 or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, about
60
that.
Or 70, maybe.
Somewhere like a little 60. Bit less than 60. Yeah, 58, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So, which means that, wait a minute. So you're getting a point just a little bit over half the time on a perfect pass. But if you save an ace, you're keeping them from scoring a point 100% of the time.
Right. Right.
It's exactly. Like, yeah. We just say, well, it's not really because you can still lose that point.
That's a good point.
It's like, hey.
On that instance, you did, right?
On that instant. Contact, yes. On that contact. Yeah. Number eight. And this is another one along those lines. The tougher the serve, the higher and further off the net the pass. So, hey, it's a tough serve. I make a pass. It's not great. Maybe it's super high and 15 feet off the net, but it was a super tough serve. It could have been an ace and it just gives us a good swing. And hey, good pass. When, hey, it's still, it might be a one pass, but given the passer's posture and given the quality of that serve, it's still a pretty good pass.
That we need to do that more. We ran into that a lot where I'm like, I don't think we can pass these threes. You know, we just need to go middle,
well,
course,
right,
go high. Yeah.
Well, right. And
you try to go
idea
three.
Is, hey, the tougher the serve, the higher and further off in the pass. Just like that. When you're on defense.
Yeah.
You're not trying to dime a dig right on the tape when somebody's, you know,
ripping
having
the
an
ball.
Open net and ripping it. Right.
Yeah.
This is a new one for me, and this is one we talked about a little bit before, I think. And this was a gold medal squared thing that I saw. Shank left is better than shank right.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Keep the ball in front of the center.
Yes, and I've kind of switched my tune about.
I've
this
been
one too.
Watching this, and it's like, hey, you shank left, and your left side is still getting a good swing. It's a short string set. Even though the defense knows where it's going, you're still getting a good swing.
Right.
Where you shank right, and the defense knows where it goes, but the set's not located,
right,
and you're not getting
ball.
A good swing.
Yeah.
And you get that long string, it's way tougher to get a good swing. And then this is my favorite one, the last one, number 10. Players should self-evaluate vision, movement skills when serves go into the net.
Ooh, I like that one. That's a
so
good
I
one.
I love this one.
Yeah.
So when the ball hits the net, that's when I can coach.
Yeah,
like hey, did you call it? Did you move? You know, what did you see? What's going on?
Yeah, that's a cool one. I like that. So they should have all that work done by the time the ball hits the net.
Well, they should have a good
beat on it.
I mean, they should have, we should know where the ball is going at least, right? And we should be moving behind it. Like, hey, who's going to take that? Do we know who's going to take that ball? And then we move to it.
Right. I love that.
And has the middle, let's say, hey, it's not just the passers, right? You know, if you're in, you know, row 3 or something, did the middle get, you know, into their spot to take an approach, or is their middle still pinned to the left sideline?
Right.
You know, what's going on the time the ball is moving from the server to the net?
I love that. It's a great list.
That's my list.
I love it. That's a lot of great. I'm going to apply those all right now.
Okay.
Our
pass
is going to be flawless. No, that's great.
Cool.
So thank you so much. So I got a few videos.
What do you have?
You can find these on the AOC website, and I'll put them in the show notes. I got Developing a Culture with Kevin Hambley. Okay. Great guy for building culture. He's so well spoken.
He is silky smooth, huh?
He really is. He's so good. Developing a Competitive Culture Over Time, Russ Rose.
Okay.
Okay. You know he's competitive.
He's got a little competitive streak.
A little bit of an edge. Salima Rockwell, Creating a Competitive Culture for Female Athletes specifically. And I like that.
Salima's amazing. Is in the Russ Rose coaching tree.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's some heavy competitive Penn State culture.
Yes, absolutely. And then Dave Shondell, who's an amazing coach as well. Creating a productive gym culture.
That's right. He's at Purdue.
At Purdue, and he's underrated because they kind of haven't really broke through. But he's an amazing coach.
No, that guy can coach.
He can coach.
That whole family can coach.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So you're on to the resource.
The resource. I'm going old school.
Okay.
Volleyball magazine.
Yes.
What's the first one that you remember?
I remember this one with Karch on it, with the pink hat.
The pink hat.
Do you remember that?
Karch. Yes. Yeah. I'm sure there was more than one.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes.
But I remember one way back in the old days when I first started playing volleyball. And the funny thing is, the guy who was on the cover, I saw him today.
Oh, really? Who was it?
Steve Sammons.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And
what a nice guy.
He had his hands over. He was playing for the USA national team. And he had this big thing. And it was all world's best blocker with a question mark.
Oh,
and,
man. And he blocked me a bunch.
He was so good. And I used to watch him on the beach. And even when he couldn't really jump anymore and stuff, his hands, he just knew where the ball was going. And his hands were like 8 inches over the net. And he touched every ball.
Oh, my gosh. He was so frustrated.
But anyway, Volleyball Magazine. Yeah, I think it was 2000, maybe 14 or 16. Lee Feinswag and Ed Chan bought it.
Okay.
Ed Chan is a San Diego guy who recently passed away, kind of sad story. He was a photographer. Lee was kind of the journalist, and Lee was a longtime club coach, club director. And Lee's into it now, and he's doing a great job. And I just got a little online subscription and started reading it. And, you know, he covers from – you know, club, NCAA Beach, NCAA Men's is going on now. And then he'll get into the national teams, AVP, women NCAA, high school. Yes. They do it all.
Well, and I feel like because it covers everything, if you made it into volleyball magazine, you made it. You know, volleyball. Yeah, it was like a big deal. Yeah. You know, so that's really
cool. So check it out. We'll have it volleyballmag.com. We'll have it in the show notes.
Sounds good. And everyone, as usual, feel free to check us out on Instagram at aoc.thevolleypod and on Twitter at thevolleypod. Thanks a lot, Todd.
Well done, my friend.
Thank you.
See ya.